Welcome to Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report, coming to you live every Thursday at 1 o'clock. We're going to thank Hearst Ranch today, the sponsor of our program. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable, native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to www.hearstranch.com. We are here in Brooklyn with a special guest in-house, and I'm here with my co-host, Erin Fairbanks.
Hey, Heather. We are super excited today to have Angela Miller of Consider Bardwell Farm in studio with us. Angela has been in studio before. We want to welcome her back. A woman who may wear many hats. Most recently, author of a new book, Hay Fever, How Chasing a Dream on a Vermont Farm Changed My Life, just came out in April. Angela also works as a literary agent representing some of the biggest names in the food world, John George, Mark Bittman. But today we're gonna take it back to the farm because this is the Farm Report. Angela, I think last time I saw you, you were sleeping out by the barns because it was kidding season this past spring, and we wanted to open up on the show today, start talking about the dairy industry and in particular, kind of the lifestyle or the life cycle of a goat. So maybe you can introduce us to some of those topics.
Well, thanks for having me today. It's great to be here on the Farm Report. Yes, when I last saw you, I was spending my nights in my car next to what we call our heifer barn, waiting for our then 65 pregnant goats to give birth, hopefully one at a time. I would spend my nights curled up and every 2 hours go into the barn and listen for sounds of labor, which sound like any other mammal, lots of yelling and trying to push babies out into the world.
Wow. And goats don't just have one baby at a time, right?
Most goats have two. They can have three. What? Occasionally they can have four.
Nice. Well, the reason we decided to start this off on the life cycle note is because, as many of you may or may not know, in order to, of course, get cheese, you need to milk the animal. Therefore, having the female on the farm kind of be the most useful. So we kind of wanted to ask, thinking of that, why you chose the breed of goat that you raise, in respect to the male. Like, what happens to that male when he's not hanging out with the woman?
Well, in order to get milk, in order to make cheese, we are working with mammals just like humans, and you don't get any milk without babies. So every year, you have to have babies on the farm. Male goats don't have babies, so you need only...
No surprises there.
Thankfully.
You need maybe one or two hardy guys to get all the girls pregnant.
What's the ratio of males to females in that respect?
You know, we generally have about 50-50. And last spring, we had 180 babies.
Whoa.
And a good half of those were boys.
What happens then?
Well, we select the boys who are sons of the best milkers. We meter the milkers every month during the lactation season. And we keep the boys and all the girls of the top 10% of the milking population. And we try to sell those bucklings, they're called, baby boys, as breeding stock. The rest of the bucklings are raised for meat. They're fed milk, goat milk. Until they're weaned, and they go on pasture, and they eat fresh, organic pasture greens all summer and into the fall. And in October, when they're about 7 months old, we start processing them and selling them to fine restaurants.
Ooh, so if I'm ready to do like a cabrito roast, I could give you a call and get a goat?
Absolutely.
And at that seven-month age, is that kind of the age you'd be looking for to take an animal to slaughter for meat?
For baby goat, which is very tender and sweet. It's exactly like lamb, only has less fat in it. So it's really healthy food. And it's the number one most popular meat in the whole wide world, except for America. So
what is up, America?
We've got to get on that goat.
We're going to change that.
We are working on it, yeah. Right?
And at 7, 8 months, they are still sweet and weigh about 70 to 80 pounds.
So getting back to the milk issue, you said some stuff there that I want to clarify for some of our listeners. The lactation season?
Yes, goats are what are called seasonal, and they have their babies in the spring when the weather's nice. This is in nature. Mm-hmm. They have their babies in the spring, and they produce milk for about 7 months. And we breed them in nature. They breed in the fall. The girls cycle in the fall, and the boys get very interested in dates in the fall. And so we put the boys in with the girls and breed them in October and November so that we have babies in March and April.
So okay.
And we don't milk them in the winter when they're just dating.
What breed of goat are we talking about?
Our breed is called technically Oberhasli, Oberhasli, mm-hmm. and it's a Swiss Alpine breed.
So it handles the cold weather pretty well?
Handles Vermont really, really well, yes.
And what about the, is there anything different about the milk that those goats are producing? I mean, was that just a breed that was available, or was there another kind of reason that you got settled on that?
It was somewhat serendipitous, Erin. I had a wonderful intern from France, and she had been milking Oberhaslis in Provence and making fresh goat cheese for restaurants in Provence, and she wanted to come to America and start her own farm, so she worked for us and convinced me that Oberhasli was the way to go. And they do produce a lot of milk.
Was it hard to find that breed?
It is a hard breed to find in America. Luckily, there are some great show goat farms.
Oh.
And we found a farm in New Hampshire
would
sell us this breed.
Cool. So you're kind of also helping to increase those registration numbers.
Yes.
And they stay, the genetics that you keep them all breeding within the same Oberhasli family.
Yes, we register them with the American Dairy Goat Association, and we register everybody so that if we need to sell bucks for good breeding stock, then they're in great demand.
I want to introduce another term here. Are you guys a closed herd or an open herd?
We're a closed herd. Mary Louise, the French intern, and I bought 6 girls from a show goat farm, and they were showing goats for large udders, which is what you need on a dairy farm anyway.
We're getting sexy goat hooters. Talk here. Yeah, if you have the goat pinup, you want the goat with the large udders.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of our bucks is the son of the 2004 National Udder Champion, a girl named Moesha. But yes, we don't buy any new goats in. We bought 6 at first, and we now have 150.
Wow.
Closed herds are, the purpose of a closed herd is that you don't want to bring it's for biosecurity. You don't want germs brought in. If occasionally you do bring in an unrelated buck, you want to quarantine them for 4 weeks and make sure they don't bring any diseases into your herd.
Yeah, sounds like a good move there.
Yeah.
What's the retirement plan for these lady goats? They got to get tired after a while, no?
I know. Think about having a baby every single year of your life.
I don't want to.
Thanks. My mom did that, I think, for about 10 years.
Oh, that's hard work.
No way.
I'm the oldest of 6.
I did it once. They get worn out. And we are now facing that for the first time of having to retire our oldest girls. They're now 10 years old. A good dairy goat who's well nourished and well cared for can live for about 15 years. So we will put our oldest tired girls out to pasture and let them just eat grass and enjoy their lives after working so hard.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
So That brings me back to something else you mentioned a little earlier, metering their milk. So you guys keep pretty good records of how much milk each animal is producing, or can you tell us a little bit more about how that works?
Correct. We belong to the American Dairy Herd Improvement Association, DHIA. And once a month, we bring a representative of DHIA to our farm for the morning milking, and each and every lactating milker, her milk is individually analyzed, metered for quantity, for quality, for somatic cell counts, which are white cell counts, which high cell counts could indicate an infection like mastitis. Protein, fat, solids. The more protein and fat, which are called the solids, make the best cheese. So we're looking to select the goats that are the best producers, and we'll sell the others to people who want to start herds.
Now, something that comes to mind for me when I think of, you know, goat's milk versus cow's milk is taste. And I know you guys raise cows on your farm as well. You know, what are the differences really there with creating a goat's milk versus a cow's milk cheese?
Well, when you taste fresh chilled milk from goats or cows, honestly, I can't tell the difference.
Wow.
Really? I've never done that. We should. I would love a side-by-side milk tasting.
Yeah, we do tastings of all of our animals' milk at the beginning of the season, just to see. In fact, different goats and different cows' milk can be sweeter or blander. So we do taste them individually. Goat milk is always very white. Cow's milk, we use Jersey cow's milk. It's a lot higher in butterfat, and it's yellow because of the way cows process beta carotene as opposed to the way goats process it. So cow's milk cheese will always be very yellow in the case of Jersey cows.
Interesting.
Goat's milk cheese is always very white.
Wow. Well, there's something I didn't know for sure. It looks like we are going to be taking a quick break here. We're going to be right back with Angela Miller of Consider Bardwell Farms on today's Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report.
Welcome back to the Farm Report on Heritage Radio Network. We are live in studio, my co-host Heather Hyman and our guest today, Angela Miller. Angela, you were talking a little bit before the break about the difference between goat's milk and cow's milk. And so you guys are using both to make cheese, but the cows aren't actually at the same farm, right?
No, we partner with Lisa Kamen at Jersey Girls Farm, and we share the 18 Jersey cows, and we work with her on her breeding program and her nutritional program, and her Jersey milk is used to make our prize-winning Rupert cheese, which was runner-up for Best in Show last year at the ACS.
Congratulations.
Thank you. She runs a really good program, and we pick up our cheesemaker, Peter Dixon, literally goes to her farm every other day with 21 cans of milk that weigh 100 pounds each when they're filled.
Whoa. Those cans are no joke. And Lisa is not a big woman. I remember showing up to the farm when she was dropping some milk off, and I was like, oh, let me give you a hand. And I went to pick
up.
I could hardly move it. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's got almost 10 gallons of milk in each can, and each gallon weighs 8.5 pounds. So Peter fills the milk cans, brings them over to our farm. He doesn't believe in pumping cold milk because it breaks up the fat molecules. So that's why he wants them to be in cans.
Oh, wow. So another kind of aspect in how you make a better cheese. I mean, we're covering a lot of ground here. And I know as I've learned more about the dairy industry, I'm constantly surprised by the amount of regulation and testing and science that goes into it all. I mean, you're not a dairy farmer by trade. How did you learn about all this stuff?
It was a very steep learning curve. We were licensed in 2004, but for the previous 3 years, I tried to do due diligence by attending conferences and learning as much as I could. Vermont has an incredible educational infrastructure for agriculture and support system with teachers as well as grants that are available. So in 2004, we were licensed to make cheese. And I always made sure that I hired people who know a lot more than I knew who could teach me.
I mean, so you guys, like, are you like the Yankees of the cheese world? I mean, do you kind of just like bring in like the killer starting lineup? I mean, is it all about the people around you? Or like what are some of the most like important resources that you've used and still use to be where you guys are as top cheesemakers in their state?
Well, one of the, I thought, aces in the hole for me was that in my literary agent life, I work with a famous cheese expert named Max McCalman, who was at Pichelin and Artisanal.
That's a very cheese.
Yeah, oriented. And he was writing books, and he had just finished his first book called The Cheese Plate, and he'd visited everyone in Vermont. I bought this particular farm and found out it was the first cheesemaking co-op in Vermont.
That's a serious history right there.
I read some of the history and I thought, dang.
That's a seller right there.
The bell rang. And Max nourished my cheese dreams and introduced me to Peter Dixon, who ultimately became our cheesemaker. And Peter had been making cheese in Vermont for 25 years.
Nice.
And he created all these fabulous kinds of cheese so that we have 6 really strong cheese products.
So is 6, that's the number of cheeses you guys are currently putting out there?
Yes, we do a little bit of extra here and there, but those are the 6 base. We have 3 cow and 3 goat basics.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes sure that he has strong quality control and consistency so that a customer who buys it in the store this year and wants to buy it next month, it'll taste the same.
Nice.
Because that's what we expect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really hard for we Americans who haven't been making cheese for thousands of years.
Right.
Consistency.
Great. Well, I mean, the environment in Vermont, you know, cheese, it's just, you know, that that's kind of like where it's at. I mean,
yeah, Vermont has a big cheese identity, Vermont State. I think cheese and what, maple syrup, right?
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, is it a welcoming thing? Is it hard to get into the marketplace? I mean, how have you found that to be?
I think it's really welcoming, Heather. In the early days, 20 years ago, Cabot and Vermont Butter and Cheese were the only game in town. And those two, in addition to the state of Vermont tourism department, made a big effort to market Vermont dairy products, especially cheese and maple syrup, nationally. Mm-hmm. So they set the tone. And the Vermont Cheese Council was started, and lots of little dairy farms started up. City people like my husband and myself, who wanted to do something different and interesting, as well as generational farmers, 6th-generation farmers who weren't making a lot of money just selling milk, who were able to become cheesemakers and charge more for their product.
Now, I mean, what's entailed in that process? I mean, is it really like a money thing? Is it getting like the actual equipment on the farm? I mean, what's the
If I wanted to move to Vermont tomorrow and I was like, you know what? I love eating cheese. I go to the Essex Market every week and Ann Saxelby, whose show you've been on. And I just want to note, we're glossing over some of Angela's history, but you can learn tons more about her farm and the work they're doing in the Heritage Archives. She was on the main course and also cutting the curd. So definitely tons more info there.
But just search Consider Bardwell. It'll all pop up.
But yeah, so I'm a cheese lover. I want to move to Vermont and start a farm. Like, how can I do that? Is that a thing people do?
What a lot of people do, Erin, is contact a lot of the cheesemakers in Vermont and say, I'd like to come and intern on the farm, learn how to make cheese, learn the general principles, learn what the infrastructure, what infrastructure is needed. I know a wonderful cheesemaker called Plowgate Creamery. Marissa is 24 years old, and she interned at Jasper Hill, and now she has her own little creamery in a rented barn. She buys in cow's milk. She takes it, her cheese, to Jasper Hill, and they age it for her so that she doesn't have to purchase, she doesn't have a big investment in money, because she didn't have money.
Right.
She had know-how and drive and ambition. And she just won a big prize at the ACS. For her cheese.
I have to check out her cheese.
Is the ACS, does that happen once a year?
The American Cheese Society competition happens once a year, and this year it was in Seattle in late August.
Oh, that's nice. So you had a little trip out west.
I couldn't go
this
year, but next year it's in Montreal, so.
That'll be a little
easier. We'll be there in force, yes.
Wonderful. So I guess, you know, in regards to like to the terroir aspect, I mean, in your land, is there something that the animals eat that is, you know, really that comes through in the cheese?
Well, we have organic pastures and we plant them every April. We do what's called overseeding in the, when it's still snowy, but we know the snow is going to melt. We buy more organic seed, and a line of us throws the seed down on the fields. And so every year we have fresh plants that we know the goats and cows like to eat that will nourish them. Peter Dixon feels very strongly about the terroir, that the milk from our goats will taste different from the milk of goats 25 miles north of us, because we have different soil, which we test every year.
Now, I've heard you do some work with restoring native grasslands or prairies. Can you tell me something about that?
Yes, we're working with the USDA, which has a program called the Perpetual Grasslands Reserve. And we have committed to put all of our pastures and fields into grassland for as long as we exist. I mean, even if we sell our farm, the responsibility of keeping it in grass will pass to the new owners. And so we hope we are committing our land to future preservation. We're not allowed to grow corn on it. So everybody in Vermont is looking to eliminate the use of corn with pests, herbicide called atrazine that gets into the water table. And the government, believe it or not, your tax dollars are going towards the government trying to get rid of these poisons that are going into our water systems.
We don't always hear such a positive thing here on the Farm Report, so that's great.
Yeah, we've found working with government agencies, Vermont agencies, to be incredibly helpful for us.
Now, is there anything that could be limiting there with being a part of this? Like, let's say you wanted to expand and build another barn or something of that sort?
We're allowed to build barns. We check that if we need more space. We're not allowed to build housing developments or plant things that are bad for the, that are deemed bad for the land.
What would something like that be? The corn.
The corn, for instance, annual crops that require you to have a lot of soil erosion. They want the grasses to be perennials.
Okay. Yeah. Very nice. Wonderful. So what do we think? Can you, is there something that you could tell me that you really enjoy sharing about your farm?
I love getting to the farm on a Thursday night after I've been in the city, and I love just creeping around and visiting the baby goats and sitting down with them and cuddling them, and they bite my hair thinking it's hay.
Oh no. Well, yeah, you have beautiful
it's
blonde
just
hair.
Just getting down there with the goats that gives me a huge amount of pleasure.
That is really nice.
I was gonna say, goats are so friendly. So if somebody wants to visit your farm, is, do you guys have a a space for them to come up or a place to buy their cheeses, your cheeses? I mean, how do we get access to your great stuff?
Well, our website lists all the retail outlets and partners that we have for selling throughout the country. We also have a store at the farm, and it's open 24/7 on the honor system. And we have a cafe at the farm that does breakfast and lunch on Saturdays and Sundays and has music.
Are you cooking?
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Grilled cheese.
Grilled cheese. Yum.
What kind of cheese do you use for that?
Well, we have an Italian-style Toma called Paulet, named after our town.
Okay.
And we use that cheese, and we call the sandwiches Pauletti's.
Oh, nice. Like a panini.
Using a panini press, yeah.
Nice. How far are you guys up from New York City?
We're exactly 4 hours from New York City. A nice drive and plenty of places to stay overnight, and farm's always open for farm tours.
Nice. So West Paulet, Vermont, consider Bardwell Farm, which was actually the site of the first cheese co-op in Vermont. I mean, that definitely sounds like a place I'd want to visit. So looks like we are about out of time. I definitely encourage you all to, check out Angela's book, Hay Fever, which can be found, probably in any bookstore that you walk into. We'll be here again next Thursday at 1 o'clock live, the Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report. I wanted to thank Angela for coming all the way out to Brooklyn, joining us in the studio.
Well, thanks, Heather and Aaron. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Next week, everyone. We'll see you Thursday at 1. Tune in.